Good afternoon. So in case you haven't guessed from our passion on this issue, this is a subject that's near and dear to all of our hearts. And it wasn't lip service when they said we work together all the time. We are constantly in each other's offices, on phones together, working together on these issues, because we know that working together we can solve this problem. So one of my friends who's in the audience said to me, she said, you're going to tell us how to fix this and how to solve this problem today, aren't you? And the answer is yes. Yes. Because of all of you all. If you haven't figured out the common denominator in everything we've said and everything we will be saying, you're the common denominator. People who care about this from a public health perspective are the common denominator. So I want to tell you, this is not my first APHA conference. My father was a public health and hospital administrator, so I grew up in my bones knowing that you can change things on the ground. So one of the stories I like to tell is when I was 12, my father was, we used to have to carry a piece of paper to remember the title, but he was director of program funding for migrant studies at the State University of New York. And so what that meant was in the summers, for two summers in a row, I was in a program with migrant kids in upstate New York in Geneseo and treated just like the migrant kids source. They knew who my dad was. But so I came away with this profound understanding of differences and opportunities and this profound understanding of why I had a responsibility. And so this job we all have now and coming together, we're going to do this with your help. So we're excited, and I hope you are too, because I'm watching your faces and watching you nod and stuff, but I'm hoping you understand that the homework John gave you is real. It's real, because you're the ones that are going to help deal with this problem, because we've got timelines of when we have to leave, and then we'll be joining you all on the other side of the table and really out there pushing you all, because we know what you can do. So, good afternoon. So the Heckler Report represented one of the earliest efforts to address health disparities in this country, and we are so proud that the Obama administration continues to make this issue a top priority. And he, as you can tell, understands that collaboration and partnerships that Secretary Heckler talked about 30 years ago are important, and he makes us work together. And we actually like each other and figure out creative ways to do things. I've got to digress one more time. So partnerships, I love partnering with these two, but the partnership I have with Nadine is really special because we put in a fraction of the money, she puts in the rest of the millions, and we get a lot done. So I like this partnership. And John's partnership with John, he makes a commitment that we're going to get something done. So those second chance Pell Grants, the pilot project, that's John. That's partnership. And how many of you know about the Pell Grant pilot programs? Good. How many of you know about My Brother's Keeper? Okay, every hand ought to go up. Whenever I ask that, and enough hands don't go up, it worries me. How many of you know whether your communities are My Brother's Keeper communities? I bet you every one of you are. And so if you don't know who your My Brother's Keeper lead is, call your mayor's office and find out why you're not at the table. The second call you need to make is to your police chief to make sure they know they need to be at the table too, because these partnerships that we have are important. I asked that question. I was just here last week at the International Association of Chiefs of Police and asked them the same question, and not enough hands went up there either, because we need to make sure that everybody's talking, and the police are not the enemy. The police are part of the solution, and we've got to make sure that everybody's at the table, because unless we learn to talk to each other and work together, we are going to fail. But I have faith in all of you all that we're going to succeed. And so a lot of what I was supposed to talk about has been covered, but there is one particular thing that is important to me, and I'm not sure how much time I have since I've digressed so much. Okay. As you know, homicide is the fifth leading cause of death for black males overall and is the leading cause of death for black males between the ages of 15 and 34. Do I have anybody 34 or under in the room who's a male? Male, sorry. Yeah. Okay. The likelihood of you, it's the leading cause of death. You ought to be worried and pay attention. So that old saw that the more things change, the more they stay the same is really true today. So even though crime rates nationally are at historic lows, we know that in some communities, violence remains an intractable problem. And that's why I say it's so important that we've got to partner up with our law enforcement communities, because we know the solutions to dealing with these things, and it's not to arrest our way out of them. These are areas where there's high unemployment, poor housing, low academic achievement, and yes, large minority populations. Young African American and Latino men are at increased risk of becoming involved with our criminal and juvenile justice systems as victims and as perpetrators, and sometimes as both. As I mentioned, last year the President launched his My Brother's Keeper initiative in an effort to bring together federal, local, and private partners for the purpose of building and extending ladders of opportunity for our youth. My office and the Department of Justice as a whole, along with all the partners you see up here, play a central role by focusing on preventing and reducing violence, improving outcomes in the juvenile justice system, and ensuring that those who are victimized have access to services. We are working closely, as John said, with the Department of Education to keep youth in school and out of the criminal justice system. So I want a show of hands. How many of you all got in trouble when you were in school? Okay. How many of you found yourselves in the criminal justice system because of what you did in school? There's one honest soul down here. So notice, things have changed. Things that are part of normal development have been criminalized now. And we are trying to change that paradigm here. We've issued guidance, that joint guidance between the Department of Education and the Department of Education, Department of Justice and the Department of Education. Again, we work so closely together we forget which departments we're in. But we've worked closely to issue guidance about supportive school discipline and changing that paradigm that zero tolerance policy does not work. It is, thank you. I like amens out there. I like to know you're listening. It does not work, and we are changing the paradigm and making sure that children are allowed to be children and that we focus on developmentally why they're acting out. So the video that we all saw last week about South Carolina, what was really, really poignant to me was that earlier that day I was in a program in this building where a police officer from Boston who was on a panel talking about supportive school discipline and the wonderful work that Chief Bethel is doing in Philadelphia, the wonderful work they're doing in Boston and some other places. And I don't know if he's a lieutenant, captain, whatever. We call him Moses. That's his name, but it's also appropriate for how he acted. But Moses told us about how he was called to a classroom in a very similar situation, and the kid had his head down, and he wouldn't participate in class, and so the teacher asked for him to be removed. Now, first of all, the child's got the head down and not disrupting the class. Why don't you just leave him alone and teach around him? But that's another story. So fortunately, Moses came to the class, and he asked the young man to come with him. No action, no reaction. He said it a second time, just like in that video, no reaction. He went over to him the third time, kneeled down beside him, and quietly said, "Now I just need you to go with me. So will you please just come with me?" Quietly like that. The kid got up and left with him. See the difference? Then when he got out in the hall, he said to him, "What's wrong?" Not, "Why are you doing this?" "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And the kid broke down, got on the floor in a fetal position crying. Someone he grew up with, he just found out had been killed. And he was just in pain. And so the officer got down on the ground with him and lay down with him. I'm a math major, not a grammar major, so don't get me. But the point of it is, hearing that story that morning and seeing that video that night, It was so sad on so many levels, because there were so many different ways that officer could have responded. And also now they have set back our work in school with school resource officers, because now people are calling for the police to be removed from schools. That's not the answer. The answer is having the right ones in the school. Have the right ones with the right training in the school. Have the right ones with the understanding of why they're there in the school. Because they're there for multiple reasons. And school safety is not the core of it. It's building relationships, understanding what's happening. So I say this to say, please don't join the bandwagon of saying, we gotta get school resources out of the school. That is not the answer. Instead, join the bandwagon of, let's look at how we do it successfully in partnership with our local law enforcement. So let me get back. I keep getting off script because there's so much to talk about here. But I'll stick with the, okay, she just gave me the warning. Is that 4 minutes or 4 sentences? Okay, so one thing I do want to talk about, because it has not been mentioned, is the relationship between victimization and future criminality, and one of the things that we're doing to deal with that. So we know that there is a strong correlation between people who have been victimized, and sometimes they become perpetrators. And if you heard the panel this morning that my colleague Theron Pride and Howard Spivak talked about this morning, we talked about this victimization issue. So one of the things that the Office for Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention and the Office for Victims of Crime are doing together is a grant called Supporting Male Survivors of Violence. We know that young men of color are the segment of society most vulnerable to violence, yet the least likely to receive support. What this means is that these young people whose brains and bodies are still developing bear a burden of trauma that they're wholly unequipped to deal with. And too often this trauma is resolved in anxiety, depression, psychological and physical health problems, poor school performance, drugs, alcohol, and yes, sometimes violence. So this new program supports efforts to plug these service gaps by working with public health departments, see your relationship, hospitals, probation departments, schools, and community services. The administrator of our juvenile justice office, Bob Lissenby, who again was here this morning, was in Baltimore last week with the city's mayor and health commissioner and the Health and Human Services regional director to announce one of these grant awards of $1 million to the Boston City Health Department. Notice where our grants are going. It didn't go to the Justice Department. It didn't go to the police. It went to you guys, to the Health Department. The project brings together health officials, faith-based organizations, social workers, and community representatives, and they'll be developing a shooting response protocol and creating a plan to raise public awareness about the consequences of victimization. I've heard that Susan Herman, who's one of the deputy police commissioners in New York, talk about this frequently. If you want to deal with criminal justice issues and stop the pipeline, treat victims, particularly our young victims of color. That's a way to stop the pipeline. We have similar efforts underway in 11 other cities, all designed to get services to those who need it and end the cycle of trauma that plagues too many of our communities. One thing that we're learning about combating violence is that violence reduction is more effective when we rely on prevention and intervention, not enforcement and prosecution. So since I'm running out of time, I want to, unlike John, who asked you to do homework, I'm asking you to make a promise. So how many of you all believe that you can make a difference? Okay, every hand ought to go up. Because how many of you all intend to make a difference? Yeah. So as my colleague said this morning, youth violence is not inevitable. I told him I was stealing his words. It is preventable. And the way it's preventable is by partnerships. We have been modeling the kind of partnership that you need, because we don't just ask you to do things that we're not going to do ourselves. Those days are over. When President Obama makes those speeches, one of which he's making today, that is a huge collaboration across the administration. What time is it? Is it? It should be happening right now. So as we were, I didn't want to say anything until it was too close to. Yeah. So we won't get ahead of it. Go look at what he's saying today, and you will see the partnerships across this administration to deal with criminal justice issues and criminal justice reform and second chance. So I have an expiration date of January 20th, 2017. You don't. And so what I want from you all is a promise that you're never going to give up. I want a promise from you all that you understand that there is a solution. We've spent all this money on evidence-based practices. We know what works. The research is already there. The question, and the money isn't. I guarantee, I know that all the money we need is not there. But we're creative people, and you all of all people are creative people, and you know how to get a lot done without a lot of money. So the commitment I want from you all is that you all are going to stop this cycle. You all are going to make a difference. And when we leave here in 2017 and join you on that side of the table, we will have already seen a significant difference because of the work that you guys do. So if you're with me, clap, because I'm